sponsored by Otterkringer, your independent beer brand supporting your independent podcast.
Yo, TWG. G. Safe, gang.
Yo, der eine aus Australien, der andere aus Wien.
TWG.
Jacob und Gabriel spitten hier im Beef. Der eine redet schlechtes Englisch, der andere scheiß Deutsch. Wir spitten hier die Rhymes so fresh, kommt verschwind ganz schnell, sonst clasht's.
Yo.
TWG represent.
Hey, TVG gang, how you doing? Yeah, I see you there, just hanging out on your own, listening to a podcast. What kind of fucking loser are you? No, just joking. If anyways, the loser, it's me. You know why? Because I'm the one doing the podcast, just another fucking bro doing a podcast on his own. And this time I literally am on my own, which makes it even sadder. I haven't got Gabriel Schaffler sitting next to me today. He's out of this podcast today for various reasons. Some of those I'm not at liberty to disclose. They may or may not be involved with him being in trouble with the law. That may be absolute bullshit. That's why I said it's may or may not. Anyhow, I thought I'd take the opportunity today because typically Gabriel is the one that's like always trying to educate us, you know, educate people like me and you. I don't know who you are, so I don't know if you're like me, but I'm going to put you in the same crowd as me anyway, because it makes me feel more comfortable talking to you. He seems to like to educate us people about what the Austrian cuisine is, right? And to be honest, he's got no fucking credentials to be doing that. Like, okay, he might have been trained as a Zuckerbäcker and may have mentioned it in every fucking single episode, like his Felix Baumgartner has jumped through the atmosphere. He did not. He just fucking made some cakes, whipped some sugar around and made some cakes. And look, being a Zuckerbäcker, it sounds cool because Zuckerbäcker, like being a sugar baker, like, I literally want my partner to call me that because that sounds somehow erotic and exciting. Not sure why. Maybe because I do have an obsession with cake. I think one of the reasons I've stayed in this country is because of the cake and the respect for cake that its coffee houses have for it. But anyway, that aside, I'm going to do read you a chapter from the book. That's right. We bring the book back to life. And don't worry, it's not a boring chapter. It's actually a menu. So I cleverly, being the clever author that I am, wow, I'm really, as the Austrians say, blowing sugar up my ass today. The clever author I am, I created a menu to help navigate the Austrian cuisine. So it's pretty much facts and everything you need to know about it. Because the Austrian cuisine, the Austrians really are obsessed, or really are proud is a better word, of their cuisine. They talk about it a lot. The Viennese, the Wiener Küche is even bigger, is even celebrated in an even bigger way here in Austria because they feel it's very original. And I was having this discussion with somebody the other day. And it was really funny. I'm laughing because it was really funny how they just pretty much disregarded it or discarded it. Pretty much said, what do they got? Like, there's nothing special about the Austrian cuisine. They got some meat, got some potatoes, got some dumplings and some desserts that don't even taste good. They got pancakes They got even scrambled pancakes, but there's nothing original in there. So they're really pretty much trash cuisine. And they were saying like that they don't understand why the Austrians celebrate it so much. But I enjoy the Austrian cuisine. And so in this chapter, I celebrated it. And hopefully you'll learn a little something along the way. So here we go. Here's the chapter, A Menu to Navigate Austrian Cuisine. Everything you need to know. The following is a no-schmarrn guide to understanding Austrian cuisine and places where you eat and drink it. A Gasthaus, a Beisel, a Heuriger. I've broken it down into bite-sized Schmankerl, which is like snacks, for easy digestion. Lecker, oder? Vorspeisen. So this is the Vorspeisen part of the menu. First, leckere Schmankerl. Don't say lecker. In Austria. This is one thing all Austrians agree on. It unites them as it unites them against their arch rivals, the Germans. Second in the Vorspeisen. Don't call a pork schnitzel a Wiener schnitzel. That will earn you a look from the waiter that feels like a schnitzel slap in the face. And if you call the pork schnitzel a leckere Wiener schnitzel, then brace for impact. Schnitzel slap incoming. Fuck, got some indigestion myself there. Sorry. I see Gabriel would cut that out, but I just haven't got that much respect for myself, really. Anyway, onwards. And you will eat that Wiener Schnitzel with Preiselbeeren, whether you like it or not, unless you want another schnitzel slap in your heathen face. Next Vorspeisen. The rest of the world calls those pink, brown, rubbery sausages Wiener. The Viennese, Frankfurter. Missed opportunity to claim another glorious invention on Vienna's behalf, in my opinion. But what's my opinion worth? I grew up giggling with my brothers every time I heard the word Wiener. I still do. In case you're wondering why, in English, it's a funny word for penis. That's right. So next time you ask or are asked for a dick pic, don't use the term dick pic. Instead, say Wiener art. It's classier. Wiener. Get it? So if you didn't get that, Wiener art, there's the wordplay on Wiener and art. So instead of dick pic, all right, I shouldn't be needing to explain this to you. Buy the book, goddammit, and read it in the book. It would be funnier. My brothers and I would pull the Wiener sausages out of our hot dogs because obviously every sausage is served in bread in Australia. And slap each other in the face with it while yelling, Wiener. I just realized I'm saying Wiener, like an Austrian, but I should actually be saying in this part of the book, like an Australian, like Wiener slap, Wiener, you're such a Wiener. I just slapped you in the face with my Wiener. We would literally do that. There was like a little hot dog place. They just did hot dogs. And they were called Wendy's. I guess they have no relation to the Wendy's in the US, but there was like just these Wiener sausages all in bread. They had a whole business based off of that. Brilliant. To think now, this was my first touch point with the word Wien or Vienna is kind of funny. Immature, I know, but funny. Speaking of other immature things we laugh at in German, how about this one? Pronounce the following like an American would read it. Wir suchen dich. You get it. We're sucking dick. Gets me every time. So I had to, it doesn't hit as much. These jokes were really made for readers, you know? Like you shouldn't be asking me to read this to you. You didn't ask me. Or this one, when my cousins first visited me in Vienna, we'd laugh every time we'd spot a sign. Gute Fahrt. I think we ended up with only two family pictures and 203 photos of Gute Fahrt signs around the city on that trip. I don't know if you've seen these signs around the city, but they're all over the place. You just don't notice them if you're not as immature as myself. Next, Vorspeisen. Austrians have a soup in their menu that is intentionally in there to confuse the foreigners. the Frittatensuppe. It is typically translated on menus in touristy locations as pancake soup. Cue awkward silence. There is literally no way somebody is going to guess that a beef broth soup with shredded pancakes will turn up on their table when they order a pancake soup. According to my Austrian friends, there are literally two types of Austrians when it comes to Frittatensuppe. Those who make Frittatensuppe plus extra Palatschinken for dessert, or those who make too much Palatschinken for Sunday breakfast and make Frittatensuppe for lunch. On to the Mittagsmenu. Austrians put horseradish and pickles in almost all sandwiches. What the fuck is with that? The horseradish is just like eating spicy grass. But I must admit, there should be a specific kind of word for the disappointment when you take your first bite on a Wurstsemmel and realize the person behind the counter at Billa, who has made it for you, has forgotten to put the pickles in. Like, for example, you could say, "You got gurkelt." But I think we should have that as a catchphrase for everything. I'm going to start using it, actually. "You got gurkelt." "You got gurkelt, man." "Fuck, man, you got gurkelt." Really building this out here. I'm going off script. I hope that's okay. Gabriel is not here, so I feel like I've got to banter with myself, which is pretty much what a crazy person does, and that's okay. Like, nobody's kind of judging them. Except the crazy people, they judge themselves because, you know, they're pretty much bantering with themselves, criticizing themselves. Anyway, moving on. Between next item in the Mittagsmenu, between the hours of 11 and 1 o'clock in Austria, you're most likely to have Mahlzeit said to you on any given day, more often than your partner has said to you, "I love you," throughout your entire relationship. Next item on the Mittagsmenu. Everybody in Austria loves a good Mittagsmenu. If there is a brilliant restaurant with no Mittagsmenu neighboring a horrible restaurant where rats are regularly spotted in the kitchen, but it serves a Mittagsmenu, they will choose the horrible rat-infested restaurant every time. Then on to the next category in the menu, side dishes. AKA in Austria, this means vegetarian dishes and, if you're really lucky, a vegan dish. First item. Buying potatoes in an Austrian supermarket causes anxiety. It feels like you need a degree in potatoes to know which ones to get. Back home in Australia, you'd have one potato, maybe two max. You'd prepare it in all kinds of different ways. You'd mash it, roast it, in a salad, boiled, stew. But here in Austria, you have a library of potatoes on supermarket shelves, each destined for a specific purpose. Speckig, mehlig, offen Erdapfel, so oven potatoes, Beilagen Erdapfel, which are like side potatoes, etc., etc., etc. The whole Mr. Potato Head family, including distant relatives, are on offer in Austrian supermarket, and it gives me a special kind of anxiety when trying to choose the right kind when shopping. However, this only reflects how much Austrians respect their Erdapfel, which is potato, if you don't know. They respect it so much that they don't seem very enthusiastic about reducing their potatoes to the lowest form of potato life, the potato chip. This is arguable, but I do think that if I was a potato, I wouldn't want to be made into a chip. When comparing snack shelves back in Australia, Austria has a very poor chip game in most supermarkets. Now, I'll give the paprika variety some serious kudos. I'd never tried this glorious chip flavor before moving here, and I will admit it has enriched my snack life. However, when you look to the variety beyond that, the whole chip game in Austria seems to be riding on the coattails of the paprika chips. You have a serious lack in chip diversity here, Austria. Where I come from, there's whole aisles dedicated to chips, with endless varieties living side by side. China has the Great Wall of China. Australia has the Great Wall of chips in every single supermarket. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying supermarkets in Oz are better than those in Austria. What you lack in chips, we lack in the deli meats department. Australia has nothing that compares to the Leberkäse Vitrine. So that's where the Leberkäse cabinet it is, and it's where this hot box where the sweaty pink meat loaf that is the Austrian's greatest pride in the supermarket is kept. And that you can have somebody make you a sandwich on the spot at the deli with all of those glorious meats and cheeses is a service that seemed like a utopian supermarket dream before I moved here. That's right, in other countries they don't do that. In saying that, in that utopia, the supreme ruler would definitely be the king of all Austrian supermarket delis, the extra Wurst. What the fuck is that? As if there isn't enough Wurst in Austria that you had to go and create some kind of superhero sausage that's moist, light-colored, fine-textured, and made from all the bloody meats out there. Next item on the side dishes. When translating the word Erdapfel into English, it makes Austrians sound like a mystical people out of Lord of the Rings. Erdapfel is apple of the earth. Next item on the side dishes. I'm not sure how controversial this is, but I'm just going to come out and say it. Just because something is called a salad in Austria doesn't mean it is one. Well, let's rephrase that. Austrians have a unique definition of what a salad is. For example, the healthiest Austrian salads ranked. First, Erdapfelsalat. Second, Wurstsalat. Third, Bachhändelsalat. Next side dish fact. Bachhändelsalat is sometimes recommended by a waiter in some parts of the country when you ask, do you have something vegetarian? Next item in the side dish menu. Krautfleckel in an Austrian Gasthaus are to a vegan like that person you end up going home with after a night out because choices were slim in the bar that night. You just end up with it because there's nothing else there. Next item on the menu. If Speck is cut up into small enough pieces and added to a salad, the salad is still considered vegetarian in Austria. In Austria, they deep fried cheese. I don't know why that seems so wrong, but seems so right at the same time.
Podcast playtime. Oh yeah, jetzt 5 Sterne geben.
Moving on to the Heuriger Buffet. So anybody that doesn't know what the heck I'm talking about when I'm talking about a Heuriger Buffet, Heuriger are the glorious places in this country, which are wine taverns. And they are traditionally only allowed to serve food and drink that has been produced by the people that are running the joint, so locally. And it's an awesome place. I love what it does to wine culture because it takes it down from this snobby kind of, you know, long-stemmed glass setting and chucks it into like, even sometimes you're given a glass with a handle on it, you know, and you drink it from this kind of stuff. And I just really like the atmosphere at a Heuriger, and they make good wine in Austria as well. So anyway, so about the Heuriger Buffet. A Heuriger or Buschenschank is a wine tavern that lives by its own rules. For example, they're one of the few places in the world that elude Google's all-knowing power. Google may tell you one is open, but then you arrive and you find a sign, come back when we're open in July. Their sporadic and rare opening hours makes visiting one outside the Las Vegas of Heuriger Grinsing, where they're always open, an exhilarating game of luck and chance. Well, it's only exhilarating after you find one open and are on your second spritzer. Heuriger communicate their opening times in code. The code is a bundle of pine branches hanging out the front. A cipher said to be envied by the Freemasons. There is definitely something mysterious and Freemason-like about Heuriger. Next time you're at one, observe the waiting staff. They display signs of superhuman strength. They weave in between tables with extremely heavy trays loaded with liters of wine and meat-heavy dishes. There's something in the wine, I tell you. Like Obelix falling into the Gaul's magic potion, Heuriger waiting staff are bathed in Heuriger wine. I swear of it. That's their secret. Wine is often served up in glass mugs or little cute glasses. And if you want to pull off a real Heidegger Profi move when ordering your drinks, simply say, "Liter, liter." You'll receive a knowing nod from the waiter, and a liter of wine and a liter of soda water will arrive at your table. DIYing your own spritzers allows for maximum consumption efficiency, and, more importantly, for everybody at the table to make it exactly how they like, which at some point will no doubt develop into a heated discussion at the table on how you make the perfect spritzer. So if you don't know what a spritzer is, man oh man, you couldn't have been here a week in Austria. But it's literally wine spritzed with water, bubbly water. However you make your spritzer, we recommend drinking a few before attempting to order at the Heidegger Buffet if you're inexperienced at this. Typically, there's no time to mess around at a buffet. They're busy, or the impatient person behind the counter will make you feel like they are, even if they're not. You need to get in there, order from the mountains of sausages, cheeses, spreads, and pseudo-salads before you piss the person behind the counter off and get the hell out of there. If you don't know what the stuff behind the vitrine is, you're fucked. On my first time, before I studied the Heidegger Buffet glossary, and I'm not joking, I literally did, after my first visit, go back and have a look what all of this stuff is, I tried to point at a thing I'd like. This only inspired the buffet controller to start pointing at what they thought I was pointing at. And then I'd direct their hand as if I was an air traffic controller helping her and a plane land. Before you know it, we were both pointing fingers flying around left and right as if we were conducting a bloody orchestra. But now I'm well rehearsed in the glorious Heidegger treats such as Grammelschmalz, Kümmelbraten, Schopfbraten, Blutwurst, or Blunzen, as they like to call it in Vienna. Or the most colourful wurst of them all, the Presswurst, which looks like to me like somebody has eaten and then vomited back up a serve of unidentifiable meat, set it in a jelly in the fridge, and served it up again. Maybe that's what it is, and if so, I congratulate all those serving it up. That's what is truly meant by the term circular economy. And that's simply a clever business idea. I know, Presswurst will never look the same again to you, and I apologize. All of those tasty Schmankerl make up the Austrians' beloved Jause. There is no better snack than a full spread of a genuine Jause. Go on, try and think of one. I'll wait. Now, side note, if you don't know what a Jause is, it's literally when Austrians get a whole bunch of glorious stuff like meats, cheeses, so cold cuts, spreads, chuck it on the table with bread, and they eat that together. The Germans call it Brotzeit. Now, just to finish that off, go on, try and think of one. I'll wait. While I do, though, answer me this. Have you noticed a pattern here? Yep, there's a pattern of cows and pigs and all the kinds of meat you can imagine, packaged into all kinds of spreads, sausages, etc. that you can imagine. You have to hand it to the Austrians. They're very creative when it comes to making things out of meat. When I was first confronted with things like Grammelschmalz or Rinderzunge, so Grammelschmalz is literally fat that you spread on bread, and Rinderzunge is cow's tongue, I truly did vomit in my mouth and ask, why? Why would you eat a cow's tongue or spread pig's fat on bread? But then I realized, at least they're eating the whole animal. In Australia, where tongue and liver and all those insides of an animal are considered vomit-worthy and are not eaten, there must be entire landfills filled with mountains of animal innards. Or maybe they just sell them to the Europeans, which is also a good business idea. Now, vegetarians, I'm sorry for the last few paragraphs. And I'm sorry for the struggle you have with the Heidegger Buffet. Then again, they do have those so-called salads for you. And vegans, well, they have the wine for you. Nachspeisen. Now, the first item on the Nachspeisen menu. Never refuse a piece of cake in Austria. I did years ago and I have regretted it ever since. Take every opportunity that presents itself to work your way through its Austrian cake and pastry vitrine. Nobody takes their Mehlspeisen more seriously than the Austrians. They've got royal cakes here. Places that used to supply the old royals with cakes have the status Kar und Kar Hofzuckerbäcker. Having such a status is like being knighted in Britain, but instead of being knighted with a sword, you're crowned with a Gugelhupf, which is this round cake that Austrians love, which is very dry, and I don't understand why they like it. Actually, when I'm thinking about it, this is not in the book, but when I'm thinking about it, Austrians like a lot of dry cakes. Like they like the Sachertorte, the Gugelhupf. There's a pattern there as well we have to explore. Every region in the country claims its own dessert, and they're very proud of it. It's like as if some point in history, there was some kind of domestic arms race of cakes in Austria. Salzburg's got the Nöckel, Upper Austria, it's got the Griesknödel, Linz has the Linzertorte. Vienna obviously won the cake race as it has a long list of sweets that it claims as its own. While a cake-making sensei is known as a Konditor in the German language, the Austrians, okay, and the Bavarians, created their own word for it as they felt their pastries and cakes deserved it being superior in all. Zuckerbäcker, which translates to sugar baker in English, which, if I was one, I would have an irresistible urge to answer the common question, what do you do, with, I'm a sugar baker, baby. This has to be one of the coolest and most literal job titles in the world. I was delighted to hear the Zuckerbäcker even have their own ball, to which more cakes are invited than people, and that a dance-off is had between Zuckerbäcker from all around Austria, but after the cake-eating competition. Okay, I made this part up, but I'd love to see that. The next item in the Nachspeisen menu. Everybody in Austria claims their Oma's secret Apfelstrudel recipe is the best. They also can't agree if Rosinen should be in there. It's a scandalous strudel, the Apfelstrudel. And don't get me started on the Topfenstrudel or the Kaiserschmarrn. Okay, next item on the menu. Okay, this might get me cancelled, but I'm just going to come out and say it. Sachertorte is to the Austrians like the Eiffel Tower is to the French. Nobody really likes it, but it's super famous. Next item on the menu. It is acceptable in Austria for your dessert to trade places with your main dish and become the main character in a meal. Kaiserschmarrn, Waldviertel Mohnnudeln, Topfenpalatschinken, a variety of dumplings that look like breast implants gone wrong, aka Germknödel. These are all accepted as dinner dishes in Austria. This cultural quirk is one of the reasons I decided to pack up, leave my family tens of thousands of kilometers on this other side of the world, and move to Austria. Do you know how lucky you are, people of Austria? You're literally living in that room in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory where all the trees and stuff are edible sweets. The fact that you can eat a plate full of scrambled pancake covered in powdered sugar for dinner must be one of the things that keep Austrians looking so young for so long. One thing is for sure, no Austrian kid is being threatened with no dessert if they don't eat their dinner. I mean, if you don't eat your deliciously sweet palatschinken, you're not getting any dessert. Does not make the same as if you don't eat your broccoli, you're not getting any dessert. Next and last item on the Nachspeisen menu. My favorite baked good in an Austrian bakery is a Topfengulacci. One of my least favorite words I've ever heard in my life is Topfengulacci. I still cannot pronounce it correctly, the word Topfengulacci. Frühstück. Well, it may seem like the right thing to do. You do not want to shoot back an IRM glass like a shot of schnapps. You plop the soft-boiled egg into the glass and fish it out again with a spoon after you've stirred it around with some seasoning. Austrians have many egg dishes. Egg Spätzle, egg dumplings, Eiernockel. It's an essential to their cakes and their beloved schnitzel. They have a true respect for the chicken's egg. Such a respect that it's enough to make anybody want to stand up before every meal and salute the chicken. Every Easter, Austrians express their respect for the egg in a strange tradition when the eggs at the breakfast table become egg gladiators that are made to fight the death in a strange tradition called Eierpecken. They respect the chicken's eggs so much that some Austrians refuse to crack eggs with their bare hands. Instead, they use a device called an Eierschalen-Sollbruchstellen-Verursachen. I can't even say it. Awkward silence follows. I'm not sure whether the device itself or its very, very long name impresses me more. People run out of breath just saying when asking somebody to pass it to them from the other end of the table. This device is worn by the egg like a little hat, or like something you can imagine somebody wearing on the electric chair. And then you drop a metal ball down onto the egg hat as if it's the New Year's Eve Times Square ball drop. It's what the Austrian people feel the egg deserves. A Times Square ball drop every time they cut an egg's head off. Or for the Francophiles out there, it's like a French guillotine for eggs. It is words like Eierschalen, Sollbruchstellen, Versuche, can't do it, that earn Austrians the reputation for being so good at dirty talk. Just imagine screaming that out during a seductive moment while cupping somebody's Eier in your hands. By the way, Austrians or Germans also call a man's balls or testicles Eier. It is words like Eier for, oh man, I didn't think I had to read this word so many times. Eierschalen Sollbruchstellen verursuchen that make you grateful for the copy-paste function on your laptop when writing about it. Okay, and we've reached the main dishes of the menu. What are considered in Austria real main dishes, aka these dishes have meat in them. First item, the Wiener Schnitzel. The Wiener Schnitzel is literally beaten up baby cow, bathed in beaten up unborn baby chicken, and fried in butter made out of milk from a mama cow. We hear you, unashamed meat eaters, and we're not judging. We wouldn't dare, as you are the overwhelming majority in the land of Austria. Next item. The people of Austria eat 35.4 kilograms of pork, 12.5 kilograms of poultry, 10.9 kilograms of beef and veal every year, and at least one labor case a week, according to 1.3 million people surveyed by the magazine Gourmet Fine. There's not one supermarket in the country that hasn't got sweating pink loaves of the stuff disappearing quickly around the breakfast to lunchtime hours. A big chunky bit of unidentifiable pink meat is slapped between a salmon every minute in Austria. Okay, I may have made that up, but you didn't flinch when you read it, as you could be true, as it could be true. And then there's the Leberkäse upgrade, the Käse Leberkäse. Sweaty pink Leberkäse spotted with beautiful pustules of melted cheese. Forget Tafelspitz and Apfelstrudel. This is the true Kulturgut. So Kulturgut is labeled on everything in Austria that's considered important to the culture. Leberkäse is life. Live, laugh, love Leberkäse. Next item on the menu. Vienna has to be one of the few, if not the only, cities that claims its own kitchen and style of food. The Wiener Küche. I mean, it makes sense when you think about it. Wien darf nicht Österreich werden. And the Viennese do like doing things in their own defiant way. At some point, Vienna broke off from the rest of Austria and developed its own cuisine. Well, actually, that's not how it happened. Many of its dishes have been adopted from the Habsburg Empire. But the Viennese still can technically claim the dishes as their own. Let's just say it's like when a manager of a company takes the praise for the work that his team has done. Next item on the menu. There are three types of people in Austria when it comes to ordering in a Gasthaus. The vegetarian or vegan that feels like a second-class citizen when looking through the menu and ends up ordering several side dishes. The meat eater that jokes about how it ain't easy being a vegetarian in Austria before they mention for the 100th time, I should eat less meat. And then there's the other person, the one who orders the gebackene Kalbsleber and Krammelschmalz as starters, and then a main of Rostbraten before sitting back confidently, comforted in the fact that they live in a meat-eater's world. Okay, and the last part of the menu, Getränke. So drinks. Nothing makes an Austrian person more happy like a spritzer on a hot day. Doctors should prescribe this stuff. Austrian's secret to living a good quality of life. Here's their philosophy. They begin every day with a positive thought. I can end this day with a spritzer. In Austria, a Pfiff is a miniature beer that was invented to make drinking before noon socially acceptable. The last part of this chapter. Zahlen bitte. All waiters in Austrian restaurants are extremely good mathematicians. They undergo extensive training when calculating the separate bills of every diner. A waiter's question, getrennt oder zusammen? So this is when they ask, would you like to pay separately or together? After any restaurant meal, will 9 times out of 10 end in all the Austrians at the table answering in choir-like unison, getrennt bitte, which is separate. And they will go on to pay to the cent only what they consumed. It actually makes a lot of sense when you think about it. But for somebody like me coming from a country where shouting drinks is the norm and the sharing of a bill is usually sorted out in a much more casual way, it's a fascinating thing to watch. Now I know Austrians better. I get it. They are Sparmäuschen, so saving mice, which is also a weird expression. Nothing wrong with that. But I do feel like that when your date makes the call getrennt, it does take the romantic momentum out of an evening. Should we split the bill on the taxi drive back to your place too? Should I pay you back for the condoms we use and the electricity consumed during my stay at your place? It does open up for a beautiful end to a lunch or dinner which you've just broken up with somebody though. The waiter comes along and asks, zusammen oder getrennt? Well, funny you should ask, Herr Ober. Last item of the menu. You'll often see a big table in most Austrian Gasthäuser marked as Stammtisch. It is a table for those who spend enough time and money in the place that they're considered like shareholders in the Beisel, like the bar. So they get their own table. These are some of the most exclusive clubs in the world. It is easier to get into Berghain than become part of a Stammtisch in an Austrian Beisel or Gasthaus. That's right, people. That was a long one, actually, but I'm very proud of that one. I like that. I liked a lot of it in there. A lot of little observations of the Austrian kitchen. Anyway, we, as always, would love to hear from you about what you thought of this episode. If you liked it or have something to say about it, do comment on Spotify or send us a DM on Instagram or on TikTok and whatever fucking other social channel you want to send it to, you do it. All right. And that's the end of this episode. Mahlzeit, I would say, to finish this. I hope you enjoyed it. Like I said at the top of the episode, big thanks to Otterkringer for sponsoring this indie podcast, the indie beer of Vienna. I must say, you got to go support your local beer brand. If you do want to let us know if this podcast has influenced your beer drinking decisions, do leave us a little comment there so we can show it to Otterkringer and they keep sponsoring us for life. That's it, people. As we say at the end of every episode, God save the Queen. As we say, no matter how bad you've got it, according to those Viennese, they've got it worse. We'll see. And bye-bye.
So, yeah, okay. Ich mag nicht mehr.
The Worst Guide to Living in Austria is a Worst Agency production, hosted by Jacob Moss and Gabriel Shasha Schaffler. It's dropped every Monday and available everywhere you get your podcasts.